Today on Family Talk.
We must make it a priority to express our love and intense gratitude toward the men and women who are sent around the world to defend our freedoms as Americans. These brave soldiers put themselves in danger every day, and unfortunately, many die protecting this great nation. It is important to honor these heroes by remembering the families they have left behind, by comforting and supporting them in whatever way necessary. Welcome to Family Talk with your host, best-selling author and renowned psychologist, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and today you will hear a heart-wrenching conversation Dr. Dobson had with the wife of a fallen American soldier. Her name is Christy Getz Bixby, and her first husband, U.S. Army Chaplain Dale Getz, died in Afghanistan in 2010. On the first part of her interview, she'll talk about why her husband became a pastor and then volunteered to enter the U.S. Army as a chaplain. Christy will also share the devastation of his unexpected death and the difficulty in parenting her kids through this tragedy. Since Dale's death in 2010, Christy has since remarried and now has 10 children. Let's listen now to this powerful testimony on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
With us is a woman that I just met named Christy Getz, and her husband, Dale Getz, has been a chaplain in the United States Army. He signed up in 2004 and was soon ministering to soldiers in Muslim Iraq, which is the biblical Nineveh, as we all know. And last year, he volunteered for a second combat tour in Afghanistan because he saw his peers being called to go three or four times, and he had only been deployed once. And we want to get acquainted with Christy today and to understand what it's meant for her to be in a military family. Christy, thanks so much for being our guest today.
It's a privilege to be here.
You met your husband Dale in 1991 and married in 94.
Correct.
Yeah. How did you and Dale get acquainted?
Well, I had just transferred in January of 91 to Maranatha, and I met him within the first week or two. Some of the girls in my dorm had introduced him to me, and he was attracted right away. But I was dating someone long distance that I had met at camp the summer out of high school.
So the chemistry was not there.
It wasn't there for me, no. And so he just kind of put it aside, but he still kept his eye on me. And within 3 weeks of being at Maranatha, I had gone to chapel. And I don't remember what the speaker said, but whatever he said made me cry back to my dorm. I picked up the phone and I called this young man that I'd been dating long distance. And I said, I love you, but we're not headed in the same direction. I want to finish school. You want to, you know, he was a dairy farmer. And that I wasn't sure where God was leading me. And I felt like I needed to end that relationship, although it was fine. The Lord was leading a different way.
Did that represent a kind of a spiritual renewal for you, or did you find Christ at that time? You were raised in a Christian home.
I was raised
you?
In a Christian home, and I actually had accepted Christ as my Savior when I was 8 years old. Yeah. And so I had always wanted to follow the Lord and do what He willed. There were some
And
stress.
Dale was also a Christian, was he
Dale
not?
Dale was not a believer until he was 17. He did not grow up in a Christian home in his young years. His dad became a believer in 76. His dad was actually kind of rough. He was a Navy guy, typical Navy guy. And his dad had gone to a service one day because he heard about this guy he grew up with who had become a preacher. And he's like, what? And he went and listened, and he was born again.
Yes,
he changed. And so, and his mom was already a believer. So Dale's sisters say he grew up with a different dad. But the Lord really worked in their lives. And so Dale actually became a believer at age 18, although he had some biblical basis.
Now, he went into the Air Force originally as
an
enlisted man.
Correct.
And then he got out.
Right.
And felt another calling.
He did. While he was in the Air Force, he was actually stationed at Lowry Air Force Base. He started attending a church and just felt really called to go to Bible college. He felt like he needed some Bible training, and he wasn't sure where that would lead to. But He desired to go to Bible college, and the Lord led him to Maranatha.
Tell us, there's a number of schools called
Maranatha Baptist Bible College. It's in Watertown, Wisconsin.
Yes.
It's a very quaint German town. Lots of history there. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Mm-hmm. And so that's where he ended up.
And you fell in love, and you got married.
We did.
Now, when he got through seminary, the first thing he did was go to a church as an associate pastor.
He was the head pastor.
Head pastor. Mm-hmm. And thought that was going to be your life?
I thought that was the plan for us. We were in a small rural church in White, South Dakota, and we were there for 3 years. And I would say after the second year, he started to share with me his desire of becoming a chaplain. He had talked to a Navy SEAL chaplain and was very intrigued by the opportunities. And he was interested in the Army because he would be able to work one-on-one more with them, and he really liked to do that. The day he told me, I looked at him, and it was right when Saddam's statue had fallen. And I said, I love you. I don't want you going over there and getting killed.
Mm. Did you say that?
I did. And I was afraid because I saw we had just gotten a TV because my sister-in-law wanted us to video our little boys so she could see them. Mm-hmm. So we got this little tiny TV and we were watching all this unfold over there in Iraq. And I said to him, I don't want anything to happen to you. I love you. And so he left it alone for a while and he just kept praying that God would work in my heart. And if it was his will, he'd pass the PT test because he was getting older and his wife would be willing. But he didn't nag me. He just left it alone. And then probably 6 months later, he brought it up one day, or it came up in our conversation. And I said to him, honey, who am I to stand in God's way? If this is what God wants you to do, I better get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And
Did you have peace about it?
I did. I had prayed about it. And I thought, if this is what God wants him to do, I need to be behind my man.
You knew that America was involved in the Middle East.
I did.
And that this could mean that he could be deployed there.
Absolutely. I didn't understand military life. I didn't grow up in it. But I knew there was potential for, difficulty. Once that peace came and he filled out the papers and he passed the test, I knew that was exactly what God had for him. And once he entered into the ministry opportunities with his soldiers, I knew that's exactly what God had for him.
You know, my mother said there were three things she would not do. This was before she was married. Three things. One of the three was that she'd never marry a preacher. She did all three of them. So you have to be real careful what you tell God you won't do.
Exactly.
And you weren't really telling him you wouldn't do it. You were just expressing the anxiety of life as a military wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was really a spiritual commitment for you when you yielded to that.
Right. It was trusting God that God would take care of my husband and us.
And sure enough, your husband was deployed to Iraq first?
Yes.
Yeah.
If I can share a little bit about Adam with this.
Mm-hmm.
When my husband joined the military, it was 2004, and I was pregnant when he joined. He had to go to chaplain school alone. I was pregnant, and I was high risk, so I went to live with my in-laws in Parker, Colorado at that time. And I had two
Because you had a high-risk
Because
pregnancy.
I was high-risk pregnancy. I had high-risk pregnancy and also these two little boys. And so I lived with my father and mother-in-law. And we had just gotten there in the end of December, and my husband left early January. He had to be to school January 6th or up around that time. And shortly after, in February, it was close to Valentine's Day, I was staying downstairs, and I went to pick up my youngest son at that time, Caleb, out of his porta-crib. It was about 1 in the morning. And as I bent over to pick him up, my water broke. I was 16 weeks pregnant. And I just cried to God, and I said, my husband's gone. What do I do? I'm way out in the country. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law was a fireman, so he rushed me to the ER, and I was told that my baby would die because there was amniotic fluid, and I should consider terminating. And I said, is there a heartbeat? And they said, yes. And I said, leave the baby there. And they warned me and said things could happen to my body. And I said, leave him there. Mm-hmm. And I went home to wait for the early delivery, thinking it might be a week or two. And it ended up being a lot longer. My husband came to pick us up in April that year. And we were driving through the hills of Idaho, the mountainous area. And that's when my husband told me that he was going to be deployed shortly after we got to Fort Lewis. And I just cried. Mm. And I thought, I'm losing my baby. I'm going to lose my husband. Mm. And I just needed the Lord's peace.
And you accepted it.
Mm-hmm. And then once we arrived at Fort Lewis, within 10 days of living in a hotel, because we were houseless at the time looking, I went to the hospital and they did an ultrasound and there was no heartbeat. So they delivered him, and the doctor was wonderful. He said, no matter what happens, this baby is going to be beautiful. Mm. And I didn't know at the time if it was boy or girl, and delivered him. And we named him Adam Christopher and gave him back to the Lord. Mm. It was a very moving, difficult time, but the Lord taught us how precious life is.
Christy, at another time, we'd like to have you here to talk about your problem with miscarriages, because you have been pregnant 11 times and you've lost 8 babies. Is that correct?
9 babies. The first pregnancy was with twins.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about that. There are an awful lot of people out there who In fact, they have asked us to talk about infertility, and so we would like to have you back to talk about that. But your husband then was deployed to Iraq, and tell us about that experience.
The day of his departure, I remember us putting all his things in his bag and just watching him. And, of course, neither of us knew the future. It was all unknown. Of course, he knew more than I did from preparation from the military life. But we said goodbye in the kitchen, and I have a picture of him standing there. I said, honey, I want a picture of you. And he's standing there sober looking at me, and I click the picture, and he put his bag over his shoulder, and he said, I'll see you later. And he got in his Bronco, and he drove away.
And he was gone for a year.
He was gone for 11 and a half months. He did get to come home for R&R, which is rest and relaxation. That's what that represents. And we were able to go to Lake Quinault in Washington and spend a week there, and it was wonderful. Mm. It was very relaxing, and the boys just had a great time roasting marshmallows and spending time with Daddy, and we just had a really sweet time together.
Well, Christy, your husband was deployed again.
Correct.
And this time to Afghanistan. And that was in 2010. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, we were prepping because it had been almost 5 years or about 5 years since he'd been deployed. And that's a long time. Most people do not have that privilege. It's every year and a half, they're gone again. And that's very hard on families. And we had been in Okinawa, and I call it our second honeymoon. And so we arrived at Fort Carson last January, and I knew that he would be deploying. And the day that he deployed, he spent a lot of time with us. We went to church that morning, and the last hymn that we sang was Take My Life and Let It Be. And I remember, Consecrated Lord to Thee. Take my moments and my days, let them flow in ceaseless praise. There's 5 stanzas. And I remember our family sitting in the back row, and I was bawling because those words were so real to me.
Were your children?
My children were with us.
Did they realize what was happening?
They knew Daddy was leaving, but the words that Dale and I were singing choked us up. I couldn't sing. In my heart, I was saying it, but realizing that I'm giving my husband to God. And we just wanted God to be glorified no matter what. And we went home that afternoon, and I took out the buzzer for my husband's hair because he wanted me to cut it all off so he wouldn't have to worry about it for a while. And he called the boys over there, and he had them do one side and then the other, and then, of course, I did the rest of it. But interestingly enough, I swept that up and put it in a baggie. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Well, I know now why. But that was like my pillow to cry on after. We, you know, said our goodbyes kind of at home. It's kind of awkward because it's long and drawn out. And Dale went and brought his things to base and then came back for us. And we brought him to the gym for our final goodbye. And the gym was full of, you know, husbands and wives and parents and children and girlfriends, boyfriends. And I remember Joel just trying to figure out what to do on the gym floor, and we found this box, and he was pushing it around and, you know, just learning how to walk. And Dale and I were just kind of cherishing that time together. And my other two boys were pushing a balloon around, probably annoying people, and throwing basketballs and with other kids. And we just didn't say a whole lot. We just kind of sat there with each other, and then I'd chase Joel. And after that, they moved them on to another location. And my husband, we were able to go there and say goodbye. And my husband sat on the floor with my three boys, and he called them one by one, and he wept. He literally wept, holding each one of them. And then he had me come over.
And you said goodbye to him, and as it turned out, that was the last time you ever saw him.
That was the last one. When I said goodbye to him, and he even says this in some of his emails he sent me, it was like we were getting torn apart. When he left the first time, I didn't know what to expect. It was painful. But this time, I literally felt like part of my body was being ripped away from me. It was really hard.
Tell us how you got the news that he had been killed in Afghanistan.
Well,
that was only a couple of weeks, I believe, later.
He had only been gone about 2.5 weeks. He left August 2nd, and he was killed on August 30th, so almost a month he had been gone. But he'd only been in Afghanistan for about 2.5 weeks and just learning, you know, a little of the terrain and, you know, what to expect there. The day that I found out, I actually was kind of pampering myself because my birthday was coming up. Mm-hmm. And I never went and got manicures, but that day I did. And my boys were in school, and I took Joel to the child care on base. They provide child care for deployed spouses a certain amount of time each month. And so I was utilizing that. And I went and got my nails done and my toenails done. And then I did a couple other errands, and I was planning on going home sooner, but I decided to do a couple more things. And I went and got Joel, and on my way home, right before I drove into my driveway, I noticed this vehicle parked kitty-corner from my house, and something just was unsettling to me. Couldn't explain it.
Were there men sitting?
There were two men sitting in there, and I felt like I was being stared at. And I drove my vehicle into my driveway, opened up the garage door. I drove in. I took out Joel. He had fallen asleep, so I walked in the house, and I laid him in his crib. And then I went back to the living room, and I opened up my blind, and I looked out, and they were still there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hmm. And I stood right in the middle of my living room, and I said, "Dear God, what if it is?" Nobody said anything to me. And I went immediately to my computer, which was right there. Got on Yahoo, and the first thing I saw was soldiers killed in Kandahar. And I went, maybe he's just injured. And I got up again, and I went to that same spot in the middle of my living room, and I said, "Dear God, what if it is?" And all of a sudden, it was like King Kong knocked at my door. Hmm. It was like boom, 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 and the doorbell rang after that. And I just was almost on my knees. And I turned around, and I walked down the stairs, and I opened up the door, and I looked at them, and here was the chaplain in his blues and another soldier in his green uniform. And I looked at them, and they said, "Mrs. Getz." And I said, "I am." And they said, "May we come in?" And I looked at them, and I said, "Can I touch you?" And I touched them to see if they were really there. And I said, "Is he gone?" And they just looked at me and kind of, you know, no, they couldn't say anything yet. And I invited them in, and they came upstairs. It was hard for them, very hard. They came up, and they did what they have to do. They told me the news, where it was, what happened. And when they had initially been at the door, and I said, "Is he gone?" And I knew he was. I said, "The Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And then that's when we went up the stairs. And within 20 minutes, I looked at my clock. My boys were going to be coming home, and I thought, what am I going to say? Yeah, how is this going to work out? They're coming home from school. And it was kind of, it wasn't chaotic, but it was kind of crazy, you know, with people coming after that. And my boys came in one at a time. The first one was Landon, and he rushed in the stairs. He walked home from school. He's 10. And he walked in, and he said, "Hi, Mom." And I said hi to him in a broken voice, and he said, "What's the matter?" And he came up the steps, and he turned, and he looked, and he saw both the soldiers, and he said, "Was Daddy killed?"
Oh, my.
And I didn't say a thing. And I just called him over to the chair I was on, and
That tells you that he had been living with that possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had. Yeah. And no more than a minute later, my son Caleb came in, running up the stairs, you know, Rowdy, dropped his book bag, and he looked, and he said, "Daddy was killed?" And I didn't have to say anything. I just called them over to me. I said, "Come here," and I had him sit on my lap, and I just held him. And I said, "Boys, I need to talk to you." And I said, "Where's the best place to be?" And they said, "Home." And I said, "Where's home?" And they said, "Heaven." And I said, "That's where Daddy is." And then they cried.
You are one courageous lady. And there is more that we want to hear from you. We want to hear the rest of your story. And we want to be able to know more about Dale and his legacy. Before we end our time together today, I want to ask our listeners to be praying not only for you, Christy, but for your three boys, that they will grow up to be godly men. Who will be a credit to their father and to the commitment that he had, and that they will serve him all the days of their lives.
Amen.
God be with you, my friend.
Thank you.
And I know he will.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We urge you to continue to pray for Christy and all the other military families who may be dealing with the death of a service member or the loneliness of a loved one currently deployed. Ask God to bless these families and surround them with the support of those close to them and make His love known to them in a real way. If you are searching for a way to help these families out, we encourage you to connect with an organization called Angels of America's Fallen. This group seeks out the children of those slain heroes and supports them by guiding them into meaningful mentoring and educational programs. Go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org to learn more. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then click onto the broadcast tab. Our mission here at Family Talk is to reinforce and uphold marriages and families. One of the most practical ways we can do that is through the Dobson Digital Library. When you go to drjamesdobson.org, simply click onto the Resources tab, and you'll have quick and easy access to all of Dr. Dobson's books, teaching DVDs, downloadable materials, and so much more. He has decades of experience on parenting the stubborn child, kindling a lasting relationship with your spouse, and navigating the ups and downs of life. You can also request any of our Best of Broadcast CDs, which are collections of our most popular shows from each year. There's so much content that we want you to have, so go now to the Resources tab at drjamesdobson.org and allow us to bless you with tools you need to fight for your family. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today. Remember to come back again tomorrow to hear the conclusion of Christy Getz Bixby's moving testimony right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Last summer, I was in a picturesque little town called Garmisch in southern Germany, and I happened to notice a small monument erected in memory of the young men who died in the First World War. It caught my attention because, as an American, I've always thought of our war dead as heroes and the enemy losses as, well, the enemy. But there on a bronze plaque were the names of boys who actually lived in that beautiful village and who suffered, bled, and died for their country. About 20 men were listed along with their ranks and dates of death, 1914 to 1918. I stood reading those names and wondering what stories they concealed and what their losses meant to the loved ones waiting in that little town. Then I walked to the other side of the monument and saw another bronze plaque listing the dead from the Second World War, 1939 to 1945. Something immediately jumped out at me. Many of the last names were the same. It was obvious that the young men who had lost their lives in that first great war had left little boys behind who grew up in time to die in the next conflagration. It also meant there were women in Garmisch who lost their husbands in World War I, only to have their sons die 2 decades later on other battlefields. This little journey into history emphasized for me once more that it is families that suffer most from the ravages of war.
To find out how you can partner with Family Talk, go to drjamesdobson.org.